we created a lot of positive potential or merit in previous lives. Because having the circumstances to do retreat isn't something that happens by accident. It doesn't happen causelessly. It happens with causes. And the opportunity to create goodness, that opportunity we have because of good causes we created in the past. So maybe we did retreat in the past and dedicated in part to be able to do retreat in the future. Or we also may have served others who were doing retreat in the past, cooking for them, shopping for them, carrying water, whatever. Helping other people who have been practicing. And that can create a lot of good karma so that we have the opportunity to do retreat. So it's important when we come in to come in feeling like this is really a great opportunity. You know? And it's very rare. You can see how few of us there are. You know, it's hard for people to get time off of work. It's hard for them to get away from their busy lives and their families. It's hard for them to make the mental space that can clear away the time and the circumstances to come to retreat. Because so many people are imprisoned by the mind that says, I have to do this and I have to do that. And so they don't feel like they have any real freedom to practice the Dharma. Even though there always is freedom to practice the Dharma, in their mind they don't see that freedom. Okay, so somehow by some extraordinary miracle, we have this opportunity to take these months now and do retreat. And we're doing retreat on Chinrezig, the Buddha of Compassion. Okay. His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, is seen to be the manifestation of Chinrezig, the Buddha of Compassion. When we say his long life prayer, we always say in the snowy mountain paradise. That used to refer to Tibet. It now refers to Srivasti Abbey, which is a snowy mountain paradise at this moment. Okay, so you can think of His Holiness being here. And remember his teachings, because that's the principal way that he benefits us, is by teaching us. And I think all of you've attended some of his teachings or heard them, and you can see how powerful they are. So we're taking some months vacation with the Buddha of Compassion, going on holiday. What are we going on holiday from? When we say we're going on retreat, what are we retreating from? Usually we think retreat means, oh, I'm leaving the city, you know, and I'm going to a special place. Actually, retreat means that we're separating from ignorance, anger, and attachment. We're separating from the mental afflictions. Okay, the retreat is from the mental afflictions. Now, that's important to remember. So we're going on holiday with compassion and wisdom. Okay, taking a vacation and retreating away from the afflictions, especially ignorance, clinging, attachment, and anger. So it's good to remember that. You know, we're retreating from the eight worldly concerns. We're trying to leave them behind and cultivate our relationships with the Buddhas who are have all the wonderful, magnificent qualities. So the Buddhas are our real best friends. You know, when we were little, we always had best friends, and even now we have our best friend that we tell everything to. But our worldly best friend can't save us from suffering, can't protect us from samsara, because they're usually caught in it too. So, you know, the Chinrezig is our real best friend, because by teaching us, by inspiring and guiding us, Tenrezi is the one that really protects us from misery and brings happiness. So, you know, just set that very strongly, you know, when you wake up in the morning, make your first thought, I'm on holiday with the Buddha of compassion. Wow! You know, the Buddha of compassion has compassion for me. I've always wanted somebody to accept me the way I am. I've always wanted somebody to love me unconditionally. Tenrezi does. I think that's important to remember so that we don't get locked inside of our loneliness and our various trips that we're going on. Just to remember that Tenrezi really is our best friend and can protect us from suffering. Okay, so really make the theme of your retreat compassion, compassion for yourself, which means really sincerely wanting yourself to be free of cyclic existence. Compassion for others, which leads you to really sincerely want others to be free of cyclic existence. And to remember to cultivate compassion, not just because people have the dukkha of pain, you know, mental and physical pain that even animals don't want. But think of the other two kinds of dukkha that I explained during the course. Changeable dukkha and all, you know, pervasive compounded dukkha. And think of what that means and what that means in terms of your life and what those mean in terms of other sentient beings. And cultivate compassion based on that, wanting yourself and others to be free of all three kinds of dukkha. Because in that way your compassion becomes very deep and it becomes impartial because you see that everybody is suffering from these three kinds of dukkha. Okay? Remember, dukkha is the Pali word that sometimes is translated as suffering, but it really means unsatisfactory conditions. So don't just think of suffering as physical and mental stuff, because that is painful, but that is also temporary. You know, I mean, people's body hurts, and your body doesn't hurt forever. Okay, you have upset emotions, but that's changing all the time. So the real thing that we want ourselves to be and others to be free of is the pervasive compounded dukkha, which is having a body and mind under the influence of afflictions and karma. Yeah. And so if we think about that, then it becomes possible to have compassion for rich people, for people that we're jealous of, for even the gods and celestial beings who seem to have so much pleasure, because we begin to see that everybody is caught in that way. Okay? So the compassion becomes very strong. And it's important to remember that compassion doesn't mean that we let other people's suffering and misery overwhelm us. Because if it overwhelms us, what happens is we stop having actual compassion, which is focused on them and wanting them to be free. And instead we fall into a sense of personal distress, which is the thought and feeling of, I can't stand to see them suffer. But when we're thinking, I can't stand to see them suffer, we're caught up in our own pain of seeing them suffer. And so the focus is shifted from others to ourselves. So we want to really make sure that the compassion stays focused on all beings and that we maintain a positive attitude, because all of this dukkha has an end. Okay? The dukkha originates from the mental afflictions. The mental afflictions or that I should say the dukkha originates from karma, the karma comes from the mental afflictions. The mental afflictions are rooted in ignorance, and ignorance is a faulty state of mind. It misapprehends how things actually exist. So as we cultivate the correct view, the wisdom realizing the emptiness of inherent existence, then this is directly opposed to the ignorance and can eventually eliminate it. When the ignorance is eliminated, then the mental afflictions are, then the karma stops, then the dukkha, you know, evaporates. And so bodhisattvas always maintain a positive, hopeful attitude. They're always optimistic because they know that dukkha and suffering are not a given. They exist only because the causes exist, and it's possible to eliminate the causes. So therefore, bodhisattvas are always optimistic. They don't throw up their hands and go, woe is me, it's all hopeless. Okay? They just keep going as long as it takes. Okay? Also, compassion does not mean bossing others around and telling them what to do. You know, like, I understand your life better than you do, so you should do what I want you to do and what I think you should do because I know what's better for you. Okay? That's not compassion. But that's often the way we think. We think we know what other people should do, and if they only just smartened up and did it, you know, they wouldn't have so many problems. But we also have to have compassion for the fact that maybe they don't see that as the best thing to do, maybe that's not their way, maybe we're wrong about what the best thing for them to do is. Okay? Okay, so compassion doesn't mean forcing our thoughts or our way of life on anybody else. No. It means helping to educate them so that they can develop their own wisdom. Because unless and until sentient beings develop their own wisdom, they're not going to be free. You know, there's no external savior that, you know, stops the suffering. So the best way is to teach and guide and inspire them, encourage others to do virtuous practice, encourage them to create good karma, encourage them to avoid mental afflictions and harmful actions that come from those afflictions. And that's a very productive way. Yeah, support the people who are practicing and help the teachings to spread and flourish in the world. Yeah. So, you know, that's for the long-term removal of suffering. Of course, you know, we try and remove the gross kind of suffering from warfare and hunger and mental distress and grief and illness and so on. And we also try to eliminate the suffering that comes when from changeable, you know, the changeable dukkha, when we don't get what we want, or when we get what we want and we're disappointed with it. Okay? And of course the dukkha, the opposite of compounded dukkha. So really trying to eliminate all of those in ourselves and others. So the Chenrezig practice is very powerful for doing this, for cultivating that kind of wisdom and compassion. Interestingly, this thousand-armed Chenrezig practice, the head lineage lama is a Bhikshuni. Yeah? It's Bhikshuni Lakshmi. Her name was in Tibetan was Gelangma Palmo. So it was one Bhikshuni, and I have somewhere a history of the lineage lamas, starting with her and going down. But Their stories are quite amazing. If I remember correctly, and I'm not sure that I do, I think she may have had leprosy and cured herself from leprosy. Mm-hmm. And then several of the other lineage lamas also had leprosy. She was also quite incredible because she was living near one monastery, I guess, and some people began to gossip, as they often do about nuns. Oh, you know, she's doing this and this, and it's naughty, naughty, naughty. And, you know, they certainly didn't have much respect for her. So usually it's forbidden to show off any kind of miraculous powers, but in this particular situation, she knew that it would prevent the people from creating negative karma by criticizing an Arya. So she cut off her head and then she reattached it again. Okay? So that was to show the people that, you know, she was not just some, you know, somebody that they should go around criticizing like that, that she was somebody who actually had spiritual realizations. So she was quite an accomplished practitioner. In Dharamsala, the nuns practice this. Actually, in many of the nunneries, the nuns practice this Chenrezi practice, and specifically the Nune practice, which means abiding in fast, which is a two-day retreat. And both days you take the eight Mahayana precepts. The first day, it's regular, you know, you have one meal and you can speak and you drink. And then the second day, there's no eating, no drinking, no speaking. And you do the practice, the longer sadhana, okay, from which yours is excerpted. So it's, but it's a longer one. And you do that and it has lots of prostrations. Okay. So what happens is, you know, all of our usual ways of kind of pacifying everything stops. You can't go to the refrigerator. You can't talk with your friends. You know? And so the only alternative you have is to turn to Chenrezi. Yeah? So it's very powerful because you're hungry, you're thirsty, maybe your body hurts. Maybe you're in a bad mood, maybe you're in a good mood, maybe who knows what, but you're in such a situation that the only alternative you have is to turn to Chenrezi. And so really feel that during the retreat, no matter what comes up in your mind, in your practice, because sometimes we remember all sorts of stuff from the past and we remember negative actions that we've done, and we remember messes that we've made in our own and other people's lives. So when this happens, you know, don't get discouraged, but turn to Chenrezi for refuge. And remember that when we turn to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha for refuge, the real refuge is the Dharma. And so we remember, oh, what are the antidotes to whatever state of mind that I'm stuck in? Okay. And then we recall the various teachings that we've heard and we put them into practice right then and there, you know, so that we can become a doctor to our own mind. And so through doing retreat in this way, you develop a lot of self-confidence, you know, because you're developing the ability to deal with your own mind. Because in ordinary life, until we practice Dharma seriously, when afflictions come in the mind, you know, we're a goner, aren't we? You know, anger comes in the mind and like, wow, we're gone. You know, attachment comes in the mind, shoo, you know, we're stuck in it. Yeah, bad mood comes in the mind, self-pity comes in the mind, we sit in the quagmire of that for as long as we can. You know, so we don't, and that's because we don't have any tools. Yeah, so the mental afflictions just make havoc in our mind. What the the retreat is time for us. It's such a special, precious opportunity to apply the teachings that we've learned to work with these various mental afflictions and let them go. To realize that they're only thoughts, they're only emotions. Doesn't mean that because we feel something it's truth and reality, or because we think something that it's accurate. No. But instead, when stuff comes in our mind, we really contemplate, is what I'm thinking true, for goodness sake? Yeah? Is what I'm feeling beneficial? And we begin to question what we're thinking and feeling, and then applying the Dharma antidotes to set our mind upright when it's been turned upside down by the mental afflictions. Okay? And so as the retreat goes on, we get more and more practice in applying these antidotes and working with our mind. And then that gives us a tremendous sense of self-confidence. Yeah? Because we realize, you know, oh, I can, you know, I'm learning to deal with situations. And then that makes us feel good. And of course, sometimes the mental affliction may be stronger than our antidotes at any particular moment, and we get carried away for a while. But then we come back and we remember to take refuge in Chenrezig and the Dharma, you know, and we come back to that. And we also have all the people here at the retreat who we offer our support to and who are offering their support to us. Yeah? So, you know, never let your mind get into the state that's saying, I'm the only one who's having this crazy mind, because everybody else is too. Okay? And, yeah? And so give your support to others and let others give you their support. And remember all these people that are doing the retreat from afar. It's over 80, maybe even over 90 by now, you know. And 45 of them are inmates. And think of, you know, all these people who are giving us their support for the retreat. You know, who are doing the retreat together with us. We're doing more sessions, but they're doing one session every day. And so they're giving us their support. And we give them our support, you know, and open our hearts to them and wish them everything good in their lives. You know, because here they are, their pictures are with us in the meditation center. In the meditation hall. And they're dealing with all their mental afflictions too. And some of them are meditating in circumstances that are much more difficult than ours. Okay? You know, so think of the inmates and how much incredible joyous effort and persistence they have in doing the practice. You know, in some places that are incredibly noisy. Prisons are not quiet places. They're very noisy. You know, sometimes violent, and you can't choose the food you like. Okay? And sometimes you may not get outside very much. And so, you know, when you step outside this hall and you see these beautiful snowy mountains, you know, offer the beauty to all of our Dharma friends who are incarcerated. And offer you know, all the positive potential we create to all the people who are doing the retreat from afar. So it's quite an international group. There's a lot of people in Jalapa and Torreon and various places in Mexico doing the retreat. Some friends in India are doing it. I'm not sure where else. There might be some Singaporeans. And, you know, quite an international group. And so, you know, really rejoice in what they're all doing and feel them as part of the retreat here. Okay.